This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Bucky Barnes to the Winter Soldier, the evolution of the sidekick in modern speculative fiction. So this week we thought we'd have a look at secondary characters and tertiary characters who are often the sidekicks or the supporting roles, if you like, to the main characters. A well-rounded story arc obviously needs these characters, but quite often you can get really invested in a secondary character to the extent where perhaps you'd like them to be in the story a little bit more or have a bit more to do.
Now, we thought we'd start off with Bucky Barnes, who obviously featured very heavily in the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe, Civil War. And the whole Bucky Barnes thing is an interesting story, because Bucky Barnes obviously started out as a young man, a boy, to be honest, who was the sidekick for Captain America. And for the most part, actually, people didn't really like him. They sort of found him to be annoying. And he was ultimately killed off. And no one really, really missed him, except for one individual, yet one young boy, who actually really, really liked the character of Bucky and was dreadfully disappointed when he was killed off and then never resurrected. A few years down the line, that young boy became a comic writer himself. And he came up with the concept of the Winter Soldier, whereby Bucky Barnes did not die, Bucky Barnes was captured and became a weapon. And the Winter Soldier was so popular that it is now entered into the cinematic universe. You know, Bucky Barnes is now widely recognized again as either a villain or a member of the Avengers. He has found his place, having gone from being quite an insignificant psychic to now being a very significant hero. And I was interested by how he was evolved and why he resonated better now than he did back then.
And I think it's looking at, superheroes, the Marvel and DC superhero story arcs are probably a good place to start looking at sidekicks, which is probably roughly where the term comes from. Going back to the original material, so back to the sort of 50s and 60s for some of them, the sidekick's purpose was literally to be a wall that the superhero could bounce off of. If we take a sidestep away from the superhero universe for a moment and go back to some of the more shallow interpretations of Sherlock Holmes, for example, where Watson's mm-hmm. depicted as being quite not all that intelligent for a man of medicine and learning at that time, and literally being someone who is there who says, "My goodness, Holmes, that's astounding," and asking him questions so that Sherlock Holmes gets to reveal his brilliance without monologuing about it, which is not the case in the books at all, and is not really... No. You know, that was a very shallow interpretation of the character. And that, I think, is what a lot of the sidekicks were like. If you have ever seen the reruns of the television series of Batman, where they wore those awful, awful... honestly, it's not even spandex, because it hadn't been invented. Skin-tight suits. It was sort of a childish interpretation of it, and it was fun, and, you know, big things in fight scenes would come up saying pow, kapow. And
yeah. Credit to them. They it was a stylized show and it was for the era, etc. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like they were actually pretending to be serious, because they weren't.
But absolutely. Robin in that particular Batman version was very much a two-dimensional character who was, I suppose, the window through which the young boys and girls of the era could look in at being part of the superhero adventure, because Batman's obviously a grown man.
Yeah. And the other thing about Robin Robin himself was created, he was introduced because Batman was such a solitary character, and the writers of Batman just found that he was just thinking a lot, and Robin was literally introduced so that they could have more dialogue, rather than just silence, basically. And so that's why he's quite a large contrast to Batman himself. And when we talk about Robin, we're talking about the original Dick Grayson, who is quite perky, he's quite chatty, and you know, he was a young boy, so yeah, he had a very different kind of temperament to Batman, which allowed for the dynamic. Hey, the dynamic duo, there you go. And in that sense, that was a duo, a psychic duo, who actually resonated quite well. And I think it was actually the success of Robin that prompted a lot of other comic book artists, and don't quote me on this, I may be entirely wrong, but I think that it really started with Robin, and then they started to introduce other young psychics, often young boys, which didn't actually work quite as well, because the reason Robin worked with Batman was that Batman was already quite quiet. And they did complete each other, whereas just the original Bucky Barnes, Captain America didn't really need a psychic, and not in the same way that Batman did. Batman needed Robin to sort of tone it down because he was a little bit serious. Captain America is a slightly more rounded person, I guess.
Yeah.
So he didn't really need Bucky in the same way, which is why I think Bucky was so easily disregarded, and also why Bucky didn't really get to be a character onto himself until he was resurrected into the Winter Soldier.
I think there's something to be said about that. And I have to say, the early sidekicks aren't very satisfying because they are two-dimensional, because they are props, you know?
Yeah.
They're not quite sexy lamp material, but they're pretty close.
Thank goodness for that.
The best sidekicks are three-dimensional characters who have issues and viewpoints and don't always agree with the main character, and you can tell a really, really good sidekick because you could take them out of the story and they could have a story of their own. I mean, you know, they could either have a story of their own incorporated in the main body of the story arc, or a story of their own as, you know, a spin-off if we're doing a TV series, or, you know, a series of books. Sidekick equals subplot, essentially. There's more to it than that, but boiling it down. And a subplot must support the story arc, so it should either enhance the story arc or it should challenge the story arc and add another dimension that way. So you can't have a sidekick that basically detracts from the main character. The minute a sidekick starts to become more active than the main character, they've taken over the main character's role, and actually the subplot is taking over the main plot, which is where it gets a bit sticky, because you sometimes find out that you've created a main character who's too perfect almost, or, you know, not as interesting, and actually it should have been the sidekick's role.
But I guess the thing with that is that I'm one of these people who actually very often cares more about the sidekick than I care about the main character. And I think that's often because the sidekick, I tend to associate more with the sidekick, because what a lot of writers do is that they actually make the main character a bit more square. So the main character is usually a little bit more ordinary, and the sidekick is the sarcastic one who is perhaps questioning their sexuality or is, you know, a different race or something like that. You know, there's an entire joke about the fact that you have the black psychic, or they decide that they can't have these qualities in the main character, but they're going to give them to the side character, which to me actually tends to mean that the side character is a little bit more interesting. I mean, a good example of this is Teen Wolf. I'm a big fan of Teen Wolf, and don't get me wrong, Scott McCall is the main character, and I think he's great. I really do like the character of Scott McCall. He's adorable, and I want to protect him at all costs. But his best friend Styles is the character that I really, really actually do appreciate and really, really like. Styles is the sarcastic little know-it-all who doesn't actually get powers. He's just constantly saving Scott and looking out for Scott, and is a little bit useless because he's human, but he's really smart. So I really like Styles. And at this point in the series, Styles has gone from being just the psychic best friend to a significant and main character in the plot, in that he also almost had a bit of a Winter Soldier element, because he sort of became a villain in one of the seasons. It was nicely done. I really enjoyed that season. So he sort of became a villain, and his character's been growing and growing because he's so popular. And that's an example where the side characters having a more interesting story arc than the main character has actually worked out, in that they didn't just basically go, oh, okay, we better just dull it down. They said, okay, we're going to promote this side character. And in a TV series, you can kind of get away with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something a bit more identifiable about some of the side characters as well.
Yeah.
But then, as I was saying before, I was having real difficulty thinking of side characters that, you know, I really root for more than anybody else off the top of my head. And I know I must have come across them, but I genuinely can't think of any at the moment. Or they've gone...
One will come to you. Oh, yeah. 2 days after we finished recording this episode.
Probably at 3 o'clock in the morning, probably. But that's usually when stuff I don't want, that I want to remember, comes to me. I don't know. It's. I think a lot of them go on and sort of become main characters in their own right as well.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
I mean, another example, and you know, I've mentioned this before, is how much of a fan of Ron Weasley I am. Now, he is a main character, but he is still definitely a psychic, because, you know, Hermione and Ron are both psychics for Harry.
Yeah. You know,
they're main characters, but they are the psychic. So I really, really liked Ron. That's not to say I didn't like Harry or Hermione, but I really, really did like Ron. And I think the reason, actually, why psychic characters are getting more interesting now is that often, very often now, they are done as the role of the advisory friend. And whereas some of the psychic characters in previous, in the traditional sense, you know, you go back and you look at Don Quixote and stuff like that, the psychic character is usually the comic relief. In that respect, they are there for the comic relief, and that's the same with Robin. He was there for the comic relief because Bats was a little bit too serious, as the Joker says. So they were there for comic relief, and I think at this point in time, side characters are still there for comic relief, but the kind of comedy that they use is often actually a little bit different, in that they're not really there for the, you know, the slapstick jokes. They tend to actually be there as the advisory. They tend to actually be smarter than the main character, in that they tend to be the one saying, no, this is a terrible idea. I'm going to do it. No, you shouldn't. Oh, he's gone and done it. Okay. And they're sarcastic, usually. And they're then the long sufferer. And that tends to be the side characters we're seeing now. And I think the reason they're popular is we just really like side characters like that.
Yeah.
The sarcasm is strong with this one.
Yeah, or if you've got a very sarcastic main character, you've got someone who's a bit more sort of wide-eyed and kind-natured and open to the universe as your side character. Yeah. You have someone who compliments.
Yeah, and it is about complimenting the character, and when you've got that dynamic properly, that's when a side character really shines through, and you can really start to enjoy them.
Yeah, definitely. Which I think probably brings us to part that really Madeline's been engineering the whole thing towards, which is she wants to talk about her latest obsession. I mean, sorry, her latest healthy invested interest in, which is a side character from the Court of Thorns and Roses series.
Okay, thank you for that correction, Jules. I am, of course, talking about Lucien. And as Jules said, I have a healthy and invested interest in Lucien.
The scan from... reading the book to get to the few pages Lucien saw.
It's not like that's what I've been doing over the last few days, so I can reanalyze his behaviour. Nothing like that at all. Shut up! No, I do like Lucien. I was rereading A Court of Thorns and Roses a few weeks ago before I started reading A Court of Mist and Fury. And I was sitting with my father, and every time I laughed, he'd just say, "This book is really funny to you because you just keep laughing out loud." And I said, "No, I'm just laughing at Lucian, who always makes me laugh. And I really appreciate characters who make me laugh." And I loved Lucian because he absolutely fit into that exasperated best friend role, which I really appreciate, because throughout the entirety of the first book, you've just got Tamlin being genuinely useless at wooing Feyre. You know, it starts off with the whole sort of, "And your hair is clean." You just look at Lucian, he's there like, "Oh God, we're all going to die. We are all of us are going to die. This is never going to happen." And I really appreciate him because he's honest. And I guess because he isn't the main character, you never get tired of him because he just pops up, says something golden, and then disappears again. And I have a lot of time for that. And I also have a lot of time for the fact that he's got a tragic backstory, which is almost a little bit more interesting than Tamlin's tragic backstory. In fact, he has the most interesting tragic backstory until you get to Rhysand. So I have a lot of time for Lucian. And he, again, when I compare how Lucian is written, and I'm not sure, I know I would consider he's a psychic character. When you look at the dynamic of Tamlin, Feyre, and Lucian, the whole first book is all about Lucian desperately trying to get Tamlin and Feyre together so that they don't all die. And he's a side character in that he's just there nudging behind the scenes quite a lot of the time. But he fits within that dynamic. But the way he's written, you wouldn't immediately say, "Oh, he's a psychic. Firstly, because when you say psychic, you tend to think of epic, you know, superheroes kind of things, which is not obviously what the book is like. And yet, you look at the structure, and Lucian is definitely a psychic. But we appreciate him more than we appreciate, well, I appreciate him more than I appreciated the old template for psychics. And I think it's because we've gone away from, psychics were the way for readers to be able to get into the story. So Robin was, for the young boy reading Batman, to be able to insert himself into Batman through Robin. Whereas now, apparently, we're all acerbic, bitter, sarcastic youths who can only insert ourselves into stories with like-minded, acerbic, bitter characters.
You know, I'm really sorry to go off on a tangent, but it's just occurred to me as you were saying that, why I can't think of a sidekick off the top of my head. And that's because the sidekicks I identify with are the old advisors. So, Dumbledore and Gandalf, or Gundalf, or however you it should be said, Gundalf, apparently. And a few of the others, like, Gabba Lunzie from the Witch's Honour series, and it's old men. It's old bearded men. That's who I relate to.
Jules.
Really?
I know I haven't seen you in a while, but is there something you need to tell me?
But no, it is the old... I suppose if I was going to pick a side character to identify with out of my own work, for example, it would either be Amy, because, you know, who wouldn't want to be Amy? Or it would be Mrs. Cranford, who is, like, this really devious old woman.
I have a lot of time for Mrs. Cranford, but... No.
So
no.
Yeah, no, that really, I mean, maybe how you identify with a sidekick tells you quite a bit about yourself. And I'm a wizard, apparently. I'm an aged and bearded advisor. Oh god, that means I'm the person who likes to move the chess pieces around but not really get involved in the battle. I did not see that coming about myself at all.
But again, we look at there are similarities still in that the advisory character is often the most exasperated because he knows stuff and no one's really listening.
Yeah.
You think of Gandalf. I mean, again, it's been a long time since I've read the book, so I think my memory is more affected by the films. But, you know, the amount of times Gandalf just goes, oh, you know, gets really annoyed with Thorin and he gets annoyed with, you know, the hobbits and stuff like that. A fool of a talk. Exactly. So actually, We have a thing about side characters now who are bitter.
Yeah. Anyway, so please get back to Lucian. It just suddenly thought, that's what I can't think of.
You should be careful about telling me to get back to Lucian, because I could quite happily talk about Lucian for an extremely long period of time.
I think that there's going to be a good example here, and you can explain exactly why. I mean, obviously you've said that the backstory and things interest you more, but exactly why, what makes you root for him when he really does have a comparatively small part, and it's even smaller in the second book. I think he'll come forward a bit in the third book. It would be logical.
Yeah.
But yeah, why? I mean, because let's be honest, there were more side characters who were introduced in those books, certainly in the second book. I quite liked Morrigan, for example, as a side character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, a bit more accessible, and yet you were still stuck with Lucian.
Now, don't get me wrong. I really do like Morrigan. I really like Morrigan. I really like Cassian and Azrael as well. So don't get me wrong, it's not that I'm totally only stuck on Lucian, because I'm not. I guess it's because Lucian was introduced first. And again, with regards to the side, you know, to the psychic, Lucian really does fit within that template in that he is the best friend of the main love interest who is trying to help the love interest get his stuff together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He falls within that template, which I've always really appreciated. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I don't appreciate the other ones. And yeah, I was definitely disappointed that Lucian didn't get more screen time, or say page time in A Court of Mist and Fury. My father was just there like, you're not laughing as much. And I'm like, yeah, it's because Lucian's not around. And then I went, yeah, Lucian's, but oh, Lucian. I got him back and he disappointed me. I was very upset with him. And yet, despite how upset I was with Lucian, I still really appreciate him. And as you say, I really do think that in the next book, he's going to step forward and he's going to become more of a significant character, because that is the logical step. And I think it's because Sarah J. Maas recognises that he is a popular character. He's certainly more popular at the moment than Tamlin. But then that isn't particularly hard, because Tamlin has made a few poor life decisions, shall we say, without giving any spoilers. So what is it also about Lucian that has made me such a sucker for him, despite being introduced to some other amazing characters? I genuinely think it is the fact that he has that nice rounded combination of angst, which I always love, and bitterness and sarcasm. But I think the reason I like Lucian the best was that I've always liked the friend characters. I like the dynamic of the friend characters, and I really, really, really wanted Feyre and Lucian to become friends. And I always felt like they actually could, because Lucian was always honest. And that was incredibly important, in that very often when you get these romantic kind of adventure stories, and you do have the dynamic of the girl and the guy and the best friend often has moments of being the most honest, in that he'll often resort to trickery to help his mate get with the girl, which is what Lucian does do. But the best friend will often be the most honest, the most open-hearted. And I really liked Lucian because he was honest from the start. He didn't like Feyre, and he told her that he didn't like her, and he made it quite obvious that he didn't like her. And yet when she pushed back, he approved, because he saw what she was then and that she could actually help them out. And ultimately he was actually a good friend to her, despite some of his failings. And I want Tamlin doesn't deserve Lucian as a friend anymore, even though Lucian is obviously still trying to be very loyal to him. Tamlin doesn't deserve Lucian as a friend anymore. So Feyre needs to snatch him up, because I think when Lucian is loyal to you, you're going to have good things going for you, because he is an incredibly loyal person. And loyalty is at the center of the psychic of the sidekick psyche. So two very different things. Psychic and sidekick. Am I making sense?
Yeah,
or am I just talking rubbish?
No, I'm with you there. I completely agree. Your perspective on it. Weirdly enough, the secondary character I associate, in fact, you can guess, which of the secondary characters in A Court of Mist and Fury do you think I identified with most? It's not the Morrigan.
Is it Amarin?
Yeah.
Yes!
So once again, we've gone for an incredibly old, not necessarily well-intentioned character.
Jules, what are you trying to tell me about
yourself? I don't know. I think I must be some sort of, like, ancient misfit loner type person.
Are you an old, sort of, amoralistic...
No. Morally flexible. Not
morally flexible. Well, that's fine then, isn't it? That doesn't surprise me, actually.
It's weird, though.
So talk a little bit about Amarin then, because again, she doesn't actually get that much time in the book. I mean, she's only really in one half of the book.
She doesn't, but she's fascinating in the sense of she has seen probably pretty much everything. She's a prisoner, in a way, mm-hmm. because she's, I think, been cast out by her own people and imprisoned in this fleshly envelope, if you like, when that's not really yeah. what she is. And yet there's still something there that people looking at her from the outside would say that she has a dubious moral compass. And it's not that. It's just that she's had to probably adapt to a degree of ruthlessness that most people don't have any experience with. And I find that fascinating. And also, I don't know. I don't necessarily want to be the character involved in a big love story, perhaps. So I find the advisor secondary character really interesting. And she is an advisor. She does do an awful lot in that capacity. She has knowledge that literally nobody else in that world has because, you know, she's not from that world.
Yeah. So
I think that's a large part of it. But she's not necessarily bad. She's not necessarily good. And I wouldn't say she'd kill you as soon as look at you, but you probably wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of her. But she wouldn't hesitate if it was a goal. She's not somebody who gets off on just killing for the sake of it, but at the same time wouldn't stay her hand if it was necessary. It's that sort of ruthlessness. That's interesting to me, which, again, probably is not shining a very flattering light on my character.
But it does beg a question, which is if we compare Amarin then to Gandalf, we'll do Gandalf. How even these advisory characters have changed over time, how they've evolved, and I think one of the major things that have evolved about them is that just that the side character, the best friend character, is no longer just the comic relief. The advisory character has stopped being usually they usually have slightly more flexible morals, as you've said.
Yeah, usually.
Do you agree? Disagree?
I do. I think Gandalf, his moral compass most definitely points north, but in pointing north it's a case of I'm willing to make sacrifices along the way. In fact, you could say that about Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Because Dumbledore ultimately was happy, not happy, but prepared for Harry to die, knew it was a necessity and did not know for certain that it would turn out all right.
Yeah, no, he didn't.
And from a personal perspective, where people haven't had to make those really, really hard choices in what essentially amounts to times of war, you can say that's a sort of moral ambiguity, isn't it? There's a bit of flexibility there. You will do what is most right, not what you personally think is right as a friend and a mentor.
Yeah.
I must avoid phrases like for the greater good, because no greater evil is ever done than under the headline of for the greater good.
For the greater good.
But,
maybe channel my inner Shaun of, not Shaun of the, Hot Fuzz.
It's a case of sometimes they tend to know that you have to make choices which often involve doing things that are bad and even despicable, but are the best choices out of a bad bunch. And it's not the first time they've had to make it. They have already learned how to live with those decisions. So, once again, that really is quite interesting to me. But yeah, I think that the characters have changed only in the sense of we're allowed to see more of that ambiguity now. And in fact, sometimes they're allowed to screw up or they're allowed to get away with murder. I mean, think of Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 5. Buffy beats Glory. Glory turns back into Ben. And Buffy just leaves him because she won't murder a human. Giles comes along while Ben is hurt and can't move and coldly and calmly suffocates him to make sure that Glory doesn't come back. Giles never ever really pays for that. That's a case of genuine murder where someone does not pay for it, which is unusual in Joss Whedon.
Yeah. I never watched that far, so...
Oh, sorry.
No, you don't need to apologise.
Yeah, but fine. I mean, he starts off as a vague and bumbling sort of mentor character who knows a lot but doesn't really get out of the library, it would seem. And again, I can totally identify with that. but underneath that, there are layers, and he wasn't always that person. And there was a time when he was actually someone quite dark, and that comes back at Need. So that sort of character journey is really interesting. So there you go. My secondary characters are probably tertiary characters who are mentors. Those are my sidekicks.
But it seems to be that the thing that we can kind of all agree on, then, I say all two of us. is that the evolution of these characters seems to vet on them becoming darker in some respect. They're not the happy-go-lucky. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we look back at, you know, Dick Grayson, who watched his mother and father die, you know, but his mother and father died in a trapezing accident, and that was awful, obviously. But then we look at Lucian in, you know, contrast, and again, spoilers if you haven't read A Court of Mist and Fury, but, you know, he had to watch the woman he loved being killed in front of his eyes. He was forced to watch. He was badly hurt physically. His brothers tried, he left home, his brothers tried to kill him. He then had his face ripped open and his eye snatched out. And, you know, these are all quite significant things to happen to a person, which, which in some ways is almost darker. So these are quite significant things to happen to a person. And whilst I'm not saying that, you know, the murder of your parents is not deeply significant, because, yeah, watching your parents get murdered, you know, Robin, he didn't watch his parents get murdered, but, you know, they were murdered. It was a setup, and that's why they died. That was, you know, that's incredibly difficult. But the nature, the way that it's dealt with, the personal nature, it's significantly darker, because we go from having a young boy who was targeted by criminals, and that's his, you know, that's how he becomes a hero, is that he decides to go against these criminals. And then we look at Lucian, who was targeted by his own father because of the fact that he fell in love with someone he wasn't supposed to fall in love with.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, had to watch that, and basically because he challenged authority. And in that sense, it's a lot darker, because his father isn't necessarily evil. He's a clearly terrible human being, you know, and his brothers are clearly awful. Well, they're not human beings. They're high fae. You know, they're clearly terrible, terrible people. But it's not, it doesn't work in the same way. It's not the clean cut. Bad people did bad things and I'm on the good side. Lucian is quite ambiguous, and the things that happened to him are more closely tied with the things that he did, in that he was the one who turned around and said, no, I defy you, I'm not going to listen to you. And in that respect, he probably blames himself a little bit for this girl's death. Just as with his eye getting ripped out, it was because he turned around and was very rude to Amarantha. I say very rude. He was rude to Amarantha, who thought, well, you know, that's not a very nice thing to say, so I'm going to rip out your eye. Which probably is a little bit, you know, over the top, but she is evil, so. kudos to her, she stuck to her character. So, yeah, it's gotten a lot darker. It has gotten a lot darker. And whilst I can't speak for Mary Cranford in the Unveiled series, we can look at Dumbledore and we can look at what he went through. And again, it's quite dark. It's quite personal. He tackled with the darkness himself. He tackled with his own mistakes and the things and the decisions that he made in his youth.
Yeah.
And so that is really how psychics have evolved. They haven't really evolved in their template. They haven't really evolved in their role, but they've evolved in the characters themselves, in that they are no longer, in fact, quite usually now, the hero tends to be the slightly more moralistic one. And again, there are other ways around, you know, if you have a very sort of ambiguous main character, you then have the psychic being a little bit more sort of, no, we shouldn't be doing that, that's very wrong. But very often, if you have a heroic main character, it's the psychic who's willing to kind of do the slightly sneaky stuff to make sure they get by. And they're there basically so that the hero can remain untainted.
Yeah. I think there's interesting in the personal story arcs of the side characters, actually. And there should be. And as I said, the best ones are the ones that do support the main plot in some way.
Yeah.
Even if their actions are never discovered by the main characters. Which, you know, or are discovered belatedly. Like, you only find out a lot about Dumbledore after he dies.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
And then you have characters like Luna Lovegood, who is actually a brilliant character and a brilliant sidekick. And she really is a traditional sidekick in a way, because she doesn't really quite fit in. She's a bit weird. And yet she is incredibly brave and really quite clever. And she just operates on a different radio wavelength to everybody else.
Yep. You can definitely say, you can definitely say that Luna operates on a very, very different wavelength to everybody else.
But of all the characters,
and that's part of what she's doing.
Of all the characters in the book, she's probably one of the kindest people. I mean, she sees through things really easily, except for, you know, mythical creatures that possibly don't exist. And trying to catch ragspurts and things like that. But she tends to see through people really easily. And the fact that people play cruel tricks and things on her, it doesn't really touch her. It's just a case of, well, people are like that. But she extends her kindness to pretty much everybody else.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of people find her to be quite peculiar. So, I suppose they can go in either direction, can't they? Because she sort of stays... She never really becomes dark, I wouldn't have said, but...
No, but I still wouldn't call... Despite, the fact that she does fall into some of the traditional sort of traits, I wouldn't call her a psychic nowadays. In the traditional sense, but perhaps in the traditional sense she is a psychic, but I think in the modern day she isn't really a psychic.
This is the part of the problem with it being a series, because I would have said by the last couple of books, or last three books even, she does sort of fall into that category.
She's a little bit like a psychic of a psychic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, she's a tertiary character, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's, you know, third tier. And there's nothing wrong with that. Your third tier characters should be developed as well if you're going to be walking them around on screen.
But there we go. So we've decided as a collective of readers and fans that the thing that we want to see more of is darkness.
Well, actually, perhaps the thing you want to see more of is your favourite sidekick, to be fair.
No, but
perhaps
but as in, like, the things that attract us now, the reason they become favourites is that they're darker now. And that's perfectly illustrated with the Winter Soldier. He didn't come back as Bucky Barnes, he came back as a villain.
Well, perhaps that's the thing, isn't it? You take your sidekick and give them a spin-off of their own, which I think is what Sarah J. Maas is doing with the Court of Thorns and Roses series. There are three more books after this trilogy, because this is very definitely a trilogy that finishes. But she's going to
Yeah.
look at stories from some of the other characters. So you might get your wish.
Ooh. Just what I've always wanted. Do you want to know my fan theory? It's not actually a fan theory. It's
Okay.
not really a theory. It's vague kind of. Well, no, I just thought it'd be cool. What if the High Lord of the Autumn Court died and Lucian inherited his powers? Can you imagine how awkward that would be? And how awesome.
Yeah, moderately.
Because
Moderately
first of all,
awkward, I
then
mean.
the reason I bring this up is that we look at Lucian in the second book, and he has stopped. He's still actually a sidekick, but the development of his relationship with Tamlin is that now it doesn't feel the same way at all. He's almost locked in an abusive relationship, if we're fair, in the same way that Feyre is. Obviously, Feyre's got it worse, but Lucian is kind of stuck with Tamlin, and Lucian is trying to retain his loyalty and still be that friend. But Tamlin is not that person anymore. He just can't be. And I honestly think it's because Lucian actually has more experience with the kind of torture that he went through. So Lucian, even though he's been very affected by what happened under the mountain, hasn't necessarily changed as a person in that maybe perhaps he's gotten a little bit more cowardly, maybe he's lost a little bit of strength. But Tamlin is significantly different. And in that respect, he's no longer the sidekick that he was in the previous book. And their relationship is based on fear now. Tamlin is big and scary and a lot more powerful than Lucian, and Lucian is afraid of him, and can't really communicate with him on the same level that he could before, because Tamlin keeps threatening him. And Tamlin used to threaten him before, but not to this degree. Before it was kind of written off as comedy, but now you reanalyze it and you think, okay, hold on a second. This is the basis of their friendship now. This is the basis of their relationship. So if Lucian were to magically become the High Lord, again, something that he didn't really want to do and that he never had any intention of doing, it would debalance the relationship he has with Tamlin even more, because now the only reason he's the sidekick for Tamlin is that he's weaker than Tamlin and that he's stuck with Tamlin. If he got powers similar to Tamlin, I don't think he'd ever be quite as powerful, but if he stepped up and became a High Lord and they started being equals. Previous, if that happened in the first book, he would still be the sidekick because he was the best friend. If it happened now, it would totally change the dynamic.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
I just want him to get out. I just want him to be friends with Feyre and Farisund to kind of adopt him. That's what I need and want. A reason to say, yeah, you're a little bit angsty, but I'm gonna drop you in the city of, I can't remember what it's called, but Valeris.
It's nice to
Welcome to
see you
Valeris.
so emotionally invested in this.
I am very emotionally invested in this. I care about Lucian, and I've been very Lucian heavy here, but I do also really very much care about Cassian, and Ezreal, I keep trying to say Morgana, Morrigan, and Amarin, and that whole lot as well. I think that they're brilliant, but they don't need saving in the same way, which is why I'm stuck on Lucian, because Lucian is the only one who's kind of been left flailing. Everyone else gets saved.
I think it's, I mean, perhaps the answer is to have companion books from other characters' perspectives. You know, they're the supporting
Yeah.
role in one, but they're the hero of their own story.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you've developed a good secondary or tertiary character, then that will stand up easily, and there will be a story to tell about them because they become very good main characters in their own right.
It'd be great if you could just, because I mean, they've done that with a few TV series, obviously, to great success. I mean, look at Angel from Buffy. He was a, I mean, he was a main character, but he was also a side character because he wasn't in it every episode, was he?
No.
And then he got his own show.
Yeah.
And so it can work, but yeah.
It can work. It has to work within the sense of really putting the props in place and making them a 3D character in their own right, even if they're not going to be on screen very much.
Yeah.
So we're back to, you know, everyone being the main character of their own story and whether or not they become a good main character because you've put the work in.
Yeah.
It's like Luca could totally have her own, probably her own spin-off story if she wanted to. Or if you wanted
to,
you rather.
So.
But, well, yeah, I mean, she might need a bit of involvement from you since you wrote it.
I just come back to my computer one day like, whoa, that's just written itself. That'd be really nice, wouldn't it?
If I hadn't read the Tommyknockers yet, that would be a great idea. But having read the Tommyknockers, that's actually not great.
No, the reason I actually really appreciate it, because you're obviously writing your little novellas, which are great because you get to see the side characters, you get to see their little stories as they go on their own little mysteries. And actually, another reason I really enjoy it when you do splinter off and let a side character take the spotlight is that it's really interesting to see the other characters through their eyes, because they're not going to be the same.
No, they're not. How they see themselves is not how that character will see them. And it's really great fun to write. I do feel I've tortured Kieran a little bit, and I know I'm not going to be very nice to him in book three either as well, so I'm feeling a bit bad.
No, Kieran! Why do you do this?
I can't...
He doesn't deserve it! He doesn't deserve it!
Part of the problem is he thinks he deserves it, that's the thing. Anyway.
Oh, you know, you hit my weakness, which is... tortured characters who think they deserve it.
You're as bad as me. I'm a real sucker for lame ducks as well.
Anyway, I think we might be coming to the end of the episode.
Yep, I think we have.
I wonder how much of that time I dedicated to talk about Lucian.
It was a reasonable proportion, I'm not going to
lie.
It was
a reasonable...
But it was a really, really good example of how... of how it all works and how someone identifies with a secondary character. So it was good. So just to recap, historically sidekicks weren't very well developed. They were there as props to the main character, or, you know, literally just sounding boards so that the main character would talk.
Thanks, Robin.
Yeah, and Watson in the old Sherlock Holmes.
And Watson in the old Sherlock Holmes. And then what happened was that side characters got a revamp. And the most significant and obvious change is that we basically made them, well, they changed the dynamic in that they would be different, not just a mini-me of the main character, and would usually often complement the main character's moralistic compass, which is that if the main character was the heroic type, side character becomes the slightly sneaky person with more flexible morals, and if the main character is the sneaky one, the sidekick becomes the moral compass, the guide.
Yeah.
And then we talked a lot about Lucian.
We did talk a fair bit about old bearded male characters who apparently I identify with. And sidekicks equal subplot.
Yeah.
So we won't go into that again, but when you think of your side character, think of it being as subplot, and they must support, even when they're off doing stuff on their own, it must support the main story arc.
But also, consider that your side character doesn't see themselves as the side character.
No.
You know, if you wrote it from their point of view, they would be the main character, and they need to react, even if they're in a supportery role, they need to act like that person. They need to act like that person. That makes no sense. They need to act like their own main character, because that's what we all are.
Okay. Well, before you
and on that
go,
note,
get talking about Lucian again.
Oh, Lucian.
To wrap it up for this week. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.